Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Buckley from the Irish Rock and Roll Museum is with me in studio this Thursday afternoon to tell us all about the making of Aretha Franklin. How are you?
I am brilliant. I'm just listening to that. This is just this. I don't know how we haven't done this before.
I know. I say a little prayer.
There are just so many great artists. But
first of all, you'll be delighted to know I love Aretha Franklin and I'd regularly listen to her in the house.
Yeah. No.
Big fan.
Huge fan. This is one of those moments, Andrea, where we are
we come together.
Complete agreement.
It's a rare moment, Alan.
And and what's rare is wonderful. Just on a side, do you have a position on who is greater, Messi or Ronaldo?
Yeah. No. I could hazard a guess.
Yeah, no. The reason I bring it up is because all the time, and particularly in recent times, of course, these debates, who is the greatest at this, who is the greatest at that. When we arrive with this particular lady, now, we can have arguments about who is the greatest voice. We can have, you know, the timbre, the quality. Jussi Björling, great Swedish tenor from at the peak in the 1930s. I think my godfather, John Allen, would agree. The greatest singer of all time. But Jussi Björling couldn't do what Aretha can do, and Aretha could do what he could do. This is the voice. I think
it's all in the voice.
Stand alone in terms of, like, people talk about icons and legends and benchmarks. You can try and be Aretha. You will never be Aretha. You can aspire to her talent. You can be inspired by her talent. But she is standalone.
Give us a little bit of a synopsis of her background, first of all, where she came from.
Yeah, well, it's not easy. It's not easy. She comes from Memphis, Tennessee, originally. And she is born into a very difficult family situation. It's one of these family situations that might have looked okay from the outside because had the veneer of respectability. Her father was a preacher and he was very famous and he was known as the Golden Voice Preacher. His name
Prominent Baptist, isn't he?
Yeah, C.L. Franklin. Very, very famous man in his own right. But to say that the man might have been flawed would not quite cover it. A lot of accusations about his interest in younger girls, etc. We won't get into that, but the young Aretha loses her mother when she's only 9. Some sources say 10, but regardless. And it has a devastating effect on her. And she gives birth 3 years later at the age of 12. Her first child is born when she is 12 years old. Her second child is born when she is 15. Not a lot of people know that about the lady, but it is a fact. In fact, there was, in terms of the fatherhood of the baby, was shrouded in secrecy really until her death, when the name was officially revealed in one of her wills that was discovered. He was a school child himself. But her first child was born with severe disabilities. And of course, being a child herself, her own grandmother did a lot of the raising of her early children.
She obviously was immersed then in gospel music.
And she is, you know, her roots and her early career are very much in that vein of being a gospel queen. And that was, you know, there was a taboo about rock and roll and soul and all that. I mean, you know, the devil's music and all of that. But she actually, and this is, I mean, talk about milestones in her career. She sings as a 12-year-old at the funeral of Martin Luther King Jr., you know, and I mean.
So her rise to stardom happened exceptionally early and probably somewhat due to family circumstance and connection then.
Absolutely. Her father actually realised her talent and decides to effectively move to New York with a young Aretha. But this is where things begin to change because, of course, the birth of soul and a different movements in music. She makes the decision and she tells her father, "I'm going to be soul." Mm-hmm. I mean, she met a young, a successful but young Sam Cooke at the time, and he had a big influence on her. But We don't see the soul until about the ninth album.
We'll talk about that in a moment. Mm. Today we're talking about, is it a particular album or a collaboration?
I couldn't do it. I literally couldn't do it. The career is so immense. And we can't do it. We can't do it justice, really, in the time we have. But I've chosen songs throughout her career, which I think everybody will know, because they are landmarks. They are absolute definitive moments in the history of music. Personally, I can't hear the first one that we played without thinking of Rupert Everett singing it in My Best Friend's Wedding.
Yeah.
which is a fabulous scene in a otherwise ordinary film, but amazing song.
It wasn't Stepmom. There was some movie around the very, very early 90s that I think some of her music featured in. And I think that's where I was first introduced to her. So the first song we played, I Say a Little Prayer. What's significant about that?
It's just a gorgeous song, and we should give full credit to writing credentials here. This is Burt Bacharach on the music, and a man who wrote more hits than anybody ever, really. So it's what I will say about Aretha. She's frequently takes on the songs of others, and she has written many songs during her career. But this was written by the great Burt Bacharach, and it's a song that really was a breakout hit for her.
How many albums did she release?
Oh, including collaborations, you're into the 40s and 50s, really.
And when did they start to become a success?
So her ninth album is the one where we really see the arrival. This is Aretha, and she is now soul goddess number one at this point. And so the songs from that album, which will feature two of today, is the benchmark where she becomes a global superstar. And it, you know, there's no substitute for talent here. She's just it's the voice, isn't it? And I just wanna be close to you. You make me feel so there it is. You make me feel like a natural woman. I feel like a natural woman listening to this song. Written by the extraordinary talent of Carole King, and first appeared on Carole's own album, one of the great albums, singer-songwriter's Tapestry. But if you want to watch a video that will bring a tear to a glass eye, Aretha performs this. It's on YouTube. You have to look this up. At the induction of Carole King into the Kennedy Center Honors. And Aretha walks out and sings. Carole King doesn't know this is about to happen. And if she did know, she's a very good actress. And in the crowd are people like Barack and Michelle Obama, who are openly weeping as this begins. But Carole King cannot quite believe. This was a huge hit for Aretha, but brought to life, I think it's 2015, I'm going to say that, but it's easy to find this video.
This is late 60s, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just 67 is when this song first came out, and this is the golden era of soul. But, you know, it's not just a soul track, it's one of those moments where I ask myself, you know, do I believe you when you're shaping a song? She did have two very turbulent marriages. We've touched briefly on her personal life. And to some degree, I pay very little attention to the personal life of artists.
Yeah.
But one can't help but feel that the experience of trauma, pain, particularly when it comes to an artist, is so formative in their work and their expression. And you really hear this is a woman who has been loved, and you can hear it in every note and every word.
In You Make Me Feel Like a Natural Woman. I want you to tell us about a song written by Aretha Franklin. But it don't take too
much time to see what you're doing to me. Oh. I mentioned another film reference, but she performs this in the song The Blues Brothers. I have to tell you, Aretha, so many singers in that crossed over and did acting roles. She only ever really appeared in two films, and I don't want to be unkind. An actress, she was not. But nobody cared in The Blues Brothers because Ray Charles is in it. He can't act a lick. Lots of other famous singers appear in that, but she plays a waitress in a soul food cafe. The Blues Brothers come in and they're trying to get her husband to rejoin the band. I don't know if people aren't familiar with the Blues Brothers. It's just one of the most fun movies ever made, and the music is spectacular. But she breaks into song, as people do in the film.
Yeah.
And she sings this. And she did write it herself. And it is... I mean, it's just pure joy.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And it's a real gear shift even from the other two that we played
absolutely.
A little earlier.
Absolutely.
What's her most successful song, Alan?
Oh, we are going to finish with it.
Right, okay. Well, don't mention it yet. But of the three we've played so far, how were they received? Well, not just in the States, but elsewhere.
Oh, these are all number ones. I mean, there's the level of success. You know, there's very few people, as we always say, who are good for 10 years, let alone 40 or 50. And Aretha's hits are standalone. She won 18 Grammys. You had run out of food. There it is. I never loved a man the way I love you. And the reason I've chosen this is twofold, really. It was her first big hit in terms of announcing herself. So this is from the ninth album. We're back in 1967 again. It's a song written by a lesser-known songwriter called Ronnie Shannon. But this is the song that actually, this is her first, you know, Billboard chart topper.
So were songwriters just, they were writing and coming to her?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I should mention a guy here called Berry Gordon, who is very much the Michigan Detroit soul factory, Hitsville, USA. He did try and sign her to the label, because they had a songwriting engine. They had a team of songwriters that produced hits. She doesn't seem to rely on one source. So she's more than happy to pick and choose
great.
From various different sources. But it's the second reason I've chosen it, it's pure soul.
Yeah.
Pure soul. And it belongs to its era. It has that amazing, you know, horn section in there, and it's just oof.
Before we talk about her passing, which is in relatively recent years, her legacy, she'll be remembered as kind of an activist too, won't she?
She absolutely will, because as I said, I mean, she performed at the funeral of Martin Luther King. She's the only artist ever to sing at the inaugurations of three different American presidents, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton and Barack Obama. Again, we talk about the idea of icon. She is synonymous, not just with her music, but with the age that she came from, the civil rights movement in America, something that deeply affected her and her music, of course. And she stood and she marched with those people as well. And Rolling Stone magazine has voted her the greatest singer of all time. I mean, and we can talk.
Hard to argue.
Yeah, it's as I said, we can talk about quality of voice, things like that, but the greatest singer of all time.
Your final pick today from Aretha Franklin.
Oh.
Respect.
Written by the very tragic Otis Redding. So Otis Redding, who most people will know from the song "Sitting on the Dock of the Bay." Well, most people might not know that actually Otis Redding was dead by the time that song became number one. He died in a plane crash 2 days before the song was released. But he wrote this one. And again, coming back to the idea that Aretha draws from many, many different sources. I mean, does this song really need me to talk about
it? No. It's her most successful, though.
Most successful,
ever.
Most iconic, feminist anthem. Is it one of the greatest songs of all time? I think so.
It's a great tune. We are going to leave listeners with Respect by Aretha Franklin. For the moment, though, Alan Buckley from the Irish Rock and Roll Museum Experience. Alan, thanks a million for joining us to tell us about the making of Aretha Franklin.
Respect.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.